guest for the first hour is Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. Jesse recently had a speaking tour on behalf of the John Birch Society. He traveled, I don't know how many cities, dozens of them, and he's going to be back on the tour. We had an opportunity to have him here in the Boston area, and C-SPAN put his speech on national television. It was televised, I think it was July 10th of early last month, and I'm sure he got quite a reception. And I really enjoyed my day and a half I spent with Reverend Peterson. He felt almost like a big brother to me, just the way he, just his demeanor. Reverend Peterson, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I'm very glad to get you on.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on. I appreciate it very much.
Yes, I wanted to ask you the response you got from the C-SPAN program. How did it go?
It was more than amazing.
Wonderful.
People from all over the country called and wrote letters and emailed me. So we got a great response. As a matter of fact, we're still getting responses from that talk on C-SPAN.
Well, I'm sure in fact, right after the program was aired, they had a little ad to buy the tape or other tapes like it. So I'm sure they sold a lot of them as well.
Yes.
And what I admire most of you is that you're not afraid. You love the truth, as you keep on pointing out.
Yeah.
And you're not afraid to point fingers where they need to be pointed.
That's right.
And first of all, you're a black person,
yeah.
And you're a conservative, and you're a John Bircher. So I guess three strikes against you to begin with.
Well, I'm also a Republican.
Republican. Well, that doesn't mean too much anymore because there's a lot of people, Republicans, who feel more comfortable in the presence of Ted Kennedy than they would in the presence of Jesse Lee Peterson.
Well, when you're black and Republican, you become an outcast in the black community. It's like it is probably easier for me to be a member of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, than it is for me to be a black Republican. And mainly because the reason that it's that way is that blacks have been taught that the Republican Party is against them and that they want to put them back in slavery and that they are the enemies of the black community. And so when you become a black Republican, I'm telling you, it is worse than anything that you could possibly become.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the attitude is that if you're a black Republican or a black conservative, you're an Uncle Tom.
Yes.
But I think you and I have the same view that the real Uncle Toms are some of these so-called, and I use the term so-called because they're false leaders of the black community.
That's right.
They're actually doing the bidding of the white establishment. They're kind of the overseers of this liberal plantation.
Absolutely.
But before we get into that, I'd like to just tell us a little bit about yourself and your ministry, your organization entitled Bond, Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny, which is based out of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Why you formed it, and a little bit about yourself, your background. You explained to the audience while you were speaking here in Boston that you used to have very racist views at one time, and you learned them in the church.
Well, it's so interesting. I grew up in Alabama, and I worked on a plantation. My parents worked on a plantation. My grandparents worked on a plantation. And it's interesting in that I never heard my parents or grandparents sit around and talk about white people and blame white people for their problems, even though the laws were against them. It wasn't passed down to me to hate white people from my parents or grandparents. Then I moved to Los Angeles at the age of 18 after graduating from high school. And at that time, I was on my own. You know, I was out in the world, and I had to deal with the issues of life. I had the challenges to face on my own. And I didn't know how to do it. And I wasn't raised by my father. My father, my mother, wasn't married when I was born. My mother married someone else before I was born. So my father wasn't around. And I didn't know how to deal with the issues of life. And I started to look around to see how to deal with life. And so the first place that I looked was in the churches, in the black churches. And most of them was teaching that it wasn't me as a black man that didn't know how to handle life, but it was the white man that was trying to hold me back. And I started listening to people like Louis Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson, the NAACP, and the Black Caucus, and others, and all of them said it is racism, it is, you know, white Americans trying to hold black Americans down, especially the black man. And so I became very angry toward the white man and toward America. I hated them for trying to hold me back. And that hatred nearly destroyed me. You know, I became very angry, very resentful. I was already angry because my father wasn't there, but I didn't recognize that as being anger. And so I became very angry. I ended up on drugs and on the welfare. And it was easy to get on welfare because they said in America, if you're black, America owes you something. And all you have to do is go down to the welfare office and tell them that you are on drugs. And so I went down and told them that I was on drugs, and they considered that to be a handicap. So they gave me $300 cash. They paid my rent. They gave me food stamps, about $100 worth of food stamps, free medical coverage. And to make a long story short, I got worse instead of getting better because now I didn't even work for myself. And when you don't work for yourself, you don't grow. You don't develop the character that God intended for us to develop. And to make a long story short, I started to examine myself after a while. You know, I was thinking, I am in America. I'm a man. Why can't I make it? Why can't I do just as the white man or any other man is doing? And so I started to ask questions of myself. And one day I was sitting in my prayer closet. And this time I wasn't begging God for anything. Normally when I pray, I would ask God to give me a wife, you know, give me money.
Another goodies, huh?
Yeah. So this time I wanted to know myself. The most powerful thing that a person can do is to know themselves, to know thyself. And so this time I'm sitting there and I want to know myself. And right away, at an instant, I saw that I had hatred in my heart. And the hatred was against my father for not being there for me. Because inside of all of us, we have a longing for the Father. And when the Father is not there, he leaves an emptiness inside of you, a void. And what we try to do is to fulfill that void with drugs and sex, with money, with friendships.
Or gangs.
Yeah, violence. We try to fulfill that void that way. And then I was angry at my mother because she was angry at my father for not being a good man, for not being there for her. A lot of mothers, when they're angry at the father, they turn their children away from the father. Some of them don't realize what they're doing, but most do. And when you turn your kids away from the father, you turn them away from God. There is an order to life, a spiritual order, whether we like it or not. And that order is God in Christ, and Christ in man, and man over woman. And when that order is broken, you have the type of chaos that you see in the black community and in our country at large. There's a mockery that is being made of manhood today. The man is being put down. He's being degraded.
Well, we see this on the situation comedy.
Yes.
That the man is a weakling.
That's right.
He can't make a decision, and their kids run roughshod, and the wife is, wife is always ridiculing him.
Yeah.
And I think that's a reflection upon our culture.
Well, what it is our warfare is a warfare between good and evil. And so it's evil attacking good because it understands that order, and evil uses people in order to destroy. And when you destroy the man, it's easy to take advantage of the woman and the children. And if anyone doubts that, all you have to do is look at the black community, because that's what happened. The liberal elite white, the Democratic Party, Jesse Jackson and Maxine Waters and others, they took the man out of the home and gave the woman the government. And the government is anti-God, anti-family, and anti-country. And as a result of that, we've been destroyed. But to just bring into bond, when I woke up and realized that it wasn't the white man holding me back, that it was because I didn't have a father to guide me, and it was because I had been lied to by Jesse Jackson and others, when I realized it was them, I thought maybe I'd go out and start and talk to black men about that.
Reverend Peterson, yes. We're going to a quick break, so please stay tuned.
All right.
And stay tuned for the talk of the Radio Free New Hampshire. Reverend Peterson's background, that he had been a racist, he learned his racism in the black church and listening to some of the so-called black leaders. He also made a very important point that the government, or we should say elements within the government, other than just saying the government, are responsible for the destruction of the black family, or at least play a key role in that. And I can tell you that they play a role in the destruction of other families as well. When my youngest daughter was born, my wife was still in the hospital with my daughter, and I get home, and there's something in the mail from Women's Infant and Children, WIC. It's addressed to my wife, and not Mrs. Shurtleff, or it's Maura Shurtleff, saying that, yeah, apply for welfare, even if you own a home, and so forth and so on. Well, I called the 800 number. I was livid, and this woman on the other end, and I said, please, take us off your mailing list immediately. And she says, oh, I understand. I said, no, you don't. If you did understand, you wouldn't be doing it. In other words, this organization is encouraging people to become dependent upon government. And we see that at all levels. Reverend Peterson, let's give some elaboration on your contention, which I agree very strongly.
Yes.
And why do you think the government wants to destroy the black family? I'm throwing you a softball because I know the answer, but I want
to... Right. Let me just quickly just say about how we got started, and I'll answer that. I know it's taking a while. But when I realized that we had been lied to, that blacks have been brainwashed by the government and Jesse Jackson and others, I thought I would go out and let blacks know that it's not what we've been told, that we've been deliberately kept down in order to be used for power and wealth. So I went out and I started BOND, the Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny. And our purpose is to rebuild the family by rebuilding the man. It is not racism that is holding us back. Right now, it is the lack of character and the lack of love for the country. Most blacks, not all, of course, but most, thanks to the government, it is immoral and un-American. And that's why we're suffering today. And I thought that they would be happy to hear that. I'm sorry, I have a little frog in my throat here. I thought that they would be happy to hear that. Instead, I was called nigger and Uncle Tom and sellout. I've been threatened. I have guns drawn on me. I have been banned from 3 radio shows that I've been hosted. I was hosted here in the Los Angeles area. And it's because most blacks don't want to hear the truth. They've been so brainwashed, they've been lied to, that they don't want to hear the truth. And that's what the government wants. That's why they took the father away from the blacks, because they want to keep blacks down in order to use them for their own personal gain. I mean, look at the Democratic Party, for an example. The Democratic Party takes blacks for, they don't give a damn about black people. They take them for granted. They use them now just for votes. And the way they keep blacks under control is by giving them programs, by making them feel good about being wrong. And they do that to keep them down. And that's what blacks need to realize. That's what all of America needs to realize, that when you turn your life over to the government, that the government use you for personal gain. The government do not care about the people at all.
Reverend Peterson, I want to ask you about some particular black, so I use the term again, so-called leaders, because
yeah,
it's false leadership.
Yes.
Well, one of them, of course, has been long dead now. His name is Martin Luther King.
Right.
And I ask this question because New Hampshire just recently passed, the last state to have officially acknowledged the holiday. What are your comments about Martin Luther King?
I think when Dr. King first started out, I believe that his intention was well. I believe that he just wanted the laws of this country to change so that blacks can move about and have their being. But from what I read now of the history of the whole civil rights movement, it was infiltrated by people with other ideas. The Socialist Party that wanted to manipulate and take control of the people. And I believe from what I'm reading now that Dr. King along the way allowed that to happen, which I think is a sad disgrace to what the civil rights movement should have been about and the intent of it. I admire some of his qualities, but I definitely disagree with a lot of things that he was in favor of.
One interesting aside is I got a mailing from Planned Parenthood a couple of years ago, and we'll talk about, you had a good article about black genocide, and we'll go into that a little bit later.
Yes.
But Martin Luther King was the first recipient of the Margaret Sanger Award. Margaret Sanger was the founder of Planned Parenthood. It was called something else, and at some point they changed the name. And she died in 1965 or 66, and of course this award is given to people who no doubt promote birth control and abortion. And he receives the first recipient, and he gave a speech at this gathering, and the speech is available. You can buy it. In fact, they want me to buy hundreds of copies to give to students and such. And I know that Planned Parenthood back as far back as, well, I think the 30s, late 30s and early 40s, had a project called the Negro Program, where they would get black clergymen to promote abortion, promote sterilization, and other things.
That's right.
And of course, I don't think too many people would scratch their heads and disagree with that, because the Tuskegee Institute, or Tuskegee, I'm sorry, down in Alabama, there was a folks who had syphilis.
Tuskegee,
right.
Yeah,
Tuskegee
Institute.
Yes, and they were they thought they were being treated for syphilis, these several dozen men, when in fact they weren't being treated, even when the drugs were available to treat them. And some of them died. Of course, it's a terrible way to die. It takes a long time. You lose your mind. And this was a government project. It was started off by a local grant, and these guys were there to be treated, to be treated and be cured. And then the government took it over, the federal government, I'm saying.
Yes.
And they were basically human guinea pigs, but because they were blacks. And the attitude of some people in government of blacks are not exactly equal to, they're a little less than human. And in fact, we'll be talking about evolution in the next segment that will be covering the racist roots of evolution. So you had in your newsletter, which if we give out a phone number, people can contact you and get a copy of this if they would like.
Yes, they can get a free copy of our newsletter by calling 1-800-411-2663. That's 1-800-411-BOND, B-O-N-D.
All right, so let's talk about this topic of black genocide.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that they did it simply because, you know, it was blacks and no one really cared. If you really look closely, that's the attitude of America today, is that, and I'm talking primarily about black Americans, black so-called leaders, black representatives, black politicians. They don't really care about black people today. Because if they truly cared about black people, they would not degrade them in the manner that they are today. For example, affirmative action. If they truly cared about black people, there is no way that they would impose affirmative action on blacks. They would show them how to get up and work and earn their own way, to study hard, to work hard. Because when you do that, you can't help but succeed in life. Welfare programs, if they truly cared about black, they wouldn't incorporate welfare into the black family. They would demand that that would be taken out of instead of put in. Out here in California and in Texas, illegal aliens are taking over the black communities across the country. And they're bringing in crime, they're bringing in drugs, they're bringing in destruction in the black community. No one is doing anything about it. The government doesn't care about black people. And just as Margaret Sanger did, the government has infiltrated the black churches today. They are brought in social programs. They are giving the churches money in order to manipulate and control. And most of the preachers have fallen for it. They are passing out condoms in the churches today instead of teaching salvation. And I've told them that God is self-control and not condom control. But the preachers won't do anything about it because they prefer the money, they prefer power and wealth over salvation. And it's a disgrace.
We have an activist in the Boston area. He deals with a lot of moral issues in the schools, teaching homosexuality.
Yes.
He told me something very interesting. He said that when the cameras aren't rolling, and when there's no media around, most of these black ministers would sound just like you sound at the at the podium, pulpit. It's wrong. It's this and this and that. We need to love, but we need to do this. And the minute a liberal politician's on his side, just the opposite.
Yes.
And, you know, Al Sharpton, who was no fan of, I'm no fan of Al Sharpton,
I
think
not.
You would feel the same way. I read his autobiography recently, and he mentioned how they will work with other organizations and other people, even people that they may not have much in common with, for a common agenda.
Yeah.
So this is why you see groups like the NAACP who now equate their struggle or their movement with the various radical I'm not talking about homosexuals in general, I'm talking about the more radical and militant ones.
Right.
And they seem to be working hand in hand.
They are. These people are working with the National Organization of Women who hate men. They're working with the ACLU who hate the country. They're working with radical homosexual groups. And they're doing it because they want power. These men are not called by God. They're called by selfish greed. They've been brainwashed to believe that they're called by God from their mothers and grandmothers who told them, boy, one day you're going to be a preacher. They are not called by God because there's no way you could be of good and encourage the type of evil that these people are encouraging in the black community. Right now, well, I don't know if he's still doing the series, but Frederick Casey Price from our Crenshaw Christian Center here in Los Angeles, one of the largest black churches in the California area and probably across the country, is teaching racism in his church. And he's doing it only because one of his white minister friends disagreed or said that he wouldn't want his daughter or son to marry a black person. And because this man want his son or daughter to marry a white person, he would call racist. And Fred Price teaches hatred. And the black community is lifting up holy hands and praising God behind a man who is teaching evil, who is teaching wickedness. And no one is doing or saying anything about it.
Well, you are. Yeah.
But us.
Well, it's interesting. When you spent a few days here in Boston, I was able to give you a chapter of a book entitled Brainwashing.
Yes.
Which was the story of the POWs in Korea, the American POWs that were being tortured by the Chinese communists. And the chapter, it was called The Negro is POW. It mentioned that, by and large, they held out much better than the white counterparts. One is because of their religious background. Most of them were Christian men.
Mm-hmm.
And second is that they didn't have the capacity to hate. And I think our nation's enemies learned a lesson from that.
Yes.
Because it wasn't too long after that that these organizations, these hate organizations, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, one of them, the Black Panthers, there's hundreds of long, some of them are long gone now.
Yes.
And, of course, the Black Muslim Movement, which, by the way, was founded by a white man, a white communist from New Zealand, who went to Detroit and somehow met up with this fellow Elijah Poole, who later became Elijah Muhammad. And his movement gained a lot of attraction. And today, Louis Farrakhan is leading this. And you see the good work that they may do, taking guys off the streets who are drug addicts and cleaning them up, love your wife. But along with that is a very ugly social agenda, a hateful agenda. And Farrakhan gets more positive media coverage. I mean, that Million Man March, he didn't have to spend 2 cents to promote it. The white liberal establishment media was a news story for a couple of weeks. Wouldn't it be nice if when we have you coming to Boston that we get the white establishment media to promote your speech? They wouldn't need, they wouldn't even give us a sound bite.
That's right.
You know, a news release in a small newspaper at the most, C-SPAN, which is not exactly what I call white establishment. But that's what we got. If you were promoting hatred and we were bringing you in, oh, there'd be millions of people waiting to hear
right.
it. Yeah.
And you have to realize, too, and I know you do already, but the mainstream media is not of good. It is of evil. And that's why it's always promoting evil, because it wants to divide and conquer.
All right, Reverend Peterson, a little music means we have another,
okay.
We have a little news break, so we'll catch you on the back end of the news break. And you're listening to Radio Free New Hampshire, the Ann Cassesian Show, and I'm Harold Shurtleff, coordinator for the John Birch Society, filling in for Ann for today. And on the line, out of Los Angeles, is Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson of BOND, Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny. Reverend Peterson has recently completed a speaking tour on behalf of the John Birch Society, which included a C-SPAN appearance. And, Reverend?
Yes.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We were discuss.
I wanted to say something about the John Birch Society. For a long time, I have been told that the John Birch Society was a racist organization, and I didn't bother to look to see if that was true or not. You know, I just took people's word at it and believed it as though it was true and acted as though it was true. And that's how most people are today, is that when they hear something, they just take for granted that it's true and never really look into it. But when I was introduced to the John Birch Society by Isola Foster, a black lady here in Los Angeles, and I looked into it, I was blown away to discover the nobility and the love of God and the love of country that the John Birch Society represents. And I am honored as a black man to be a part of it.
Well, we're honored to have you.
And I'm saying that because I want other people, and especially black people, to look for themselves and not just take someone else's word. The John Birch Society has a library that can prove everything that it says. It has history about this country and the goings on of this country. And so anything that they want to know, they can go there, they can write there, they can call the library and get any information that they want. If they want to know about the society has been attacked by the media, just as the media attack anyone who stands for truth. And so it's been lied on, and I just want to encourage people to get more information about the society and get involved in what we're trying to do.
Well, thank you. And if people would like to get information about the John Birch Society, they can call 1-800-JBS-USA1. For a $5 information packet, and you can ask the bill to pay by credit card. Or if you plan on going to that dinner on September 11th, I'll be have a table there. October 4th in Milford, New Hampshire at the library, Monday, October 4th at 7 p.m. I'll be giving a talk, and I'll have plenty of literature there as well. And also, you have an 800 number if people like to get a copy of your newsletter.
Yes, they can get a free copy of our newsletter. We put out a newsletter every other month or so by calling 1-800-411-2663. That's 1-800-411-BOND, B-O-N-D.
And so let me ask you, public education, and especially in the black community.
You would have to be, as I said in my talk, you would have to be, a parent would have to be blind, crippled, and crazy to send their child or children to a public school system today. They will have to hate their children. They get up in the morning and say, you know, I hate my kid. What can I do to punish them? Send them off to a public school. Because the public school is a socialist campground for destruction. And I would go to jail before I would send my child to those type of schools. For example, here in Los Angeles, there's a program in the public school system today called Project 10, and it's been there over 10 years now, and they have taught the boys and girls that it's normal for two boys to have sex together, to be good homosexuals, and two girls. And now, when the kids who disagree with that lifestyle go into the schools, into the bathroom, they catch boys making out with one another and girls making out, and when they complain about it, The kids who complain about it are being put out of school.
Oh, they're being harassed?
Yeah.
Or they've used the term desensitized.
That's right.
And, you know, it's not happening just in Los Angeles. It's happening in rural Maine, rural New Hampshire. It's happening all over the country.
Yes.
There was a fellow I met who was going to a public school up. Oh, we're going to another break.
Okay,
we'll catch you in the back end. You're listening to Radio Free New Hampshire. We're on with the Reverend Jesse Peterson of BOND, Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny. And he's based out of Los Angeles. The organization is a nationwide organization. And Reverend Peterson, can you give out that number again?
Yes, I can. For a free copy of the newsletter or any information about the organization, they can call 1-800-411-2663. That's 1-800-411-BOND, B-O-N-D. We also have a website address, too, if they want to look at our webpage.
That is
www.bondinfo, one word, BONDINFO www.thebiblecenter.org, O-R-G.
And you also have a booklet out that's called, let's see, the Seven Guaranteed Steps to Spiritual, Family, and Financial Success.
Absolutely. You know, that book, to my amazement, is selling like hotcakes.
Really?
Yes, it is. And we get so many people writing back and telling us how, you know, grateful they are for it. We just had a company order about 100 copies the other day, and he's giving them out to his employees.
Well, I'd like to get one from you.
Okay.
How do I order it?
We just call 1-800.
Okay.
411-2663. 1-800-411-BOND, and you can give your MasterCard or credit card number, or you can send a check or money order for $12, I believe.
$12. Oh, that's not too
that
much.
That includes shipping and handling.
Okay.
To BOND at P.O. Box. Let's see here. All these numbers.
I think I have it. P.O. Box 35090.
Yes.
Los Angeles, California. 90035-0090. Let me say that again. That's BOND, P.O. Box 35090, Los Angeles, L.A., California, 90035-0090.
Right. The regular price of the book itself is $10, but it's $2 for
shipping. Shipping, so, sure.
Yes.
Well, how big a book is it?
You know what? I don't know exactly how big. It's a nice reading book. Easy to read. Very comfortable. Simple answers to life.
Do I need to have a dictionary beside me as I'm reading it?
You won't.
Okay.
Anyone
that's good.
Can read it and understand it. You will have to be not wanting to understand not to get what you want.
You get
what?
Those are the best kind.
Yes.
And I understand you're working on a book, a regular book.
I am. The book is called From Rage to Responsibility, and hopefully it'll be out next fall, year 2000.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's a very in-depth book, and we're getting good reviews from it at this point.
And you're going back on tour for the Birch Society, I understand.
I sure am.
Yeah, you won't be coming to New England, but you'll be traveling around the Midwest, is it?
I'm doing the Midwest and the Deep South, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Oklahoma, Michigan, Chicago, you know, places like that.
Well, you know what?
This time it's I think it's 17 days.
17 days.
Before it's like a 10-day tour.
That's quite a grueling tour, too. It's not you're driving from, you get it up in the morning at 5, you're on the plane, then you're on radio shows, a quick bite to eat, and you're back speaking, and then you're back in a hotel. You don't even know what city you're in sometimes.
That's right.
You know,
so when you hear about that, it sounds like it's, you know, like the lifestyle that everybody would want. But when you're out there in from city to city, going to bed like 1 and 2 in the morning, getting up at 5 to catch a flight, it definitely has a toll on you after a while.
But imagine it must be very exhilarating to know that this very important message is being heard by thousands, hundreds of thousands, and maybe even millions with that. I don't know how many people watch C-SPAN, but
that's right.
You know, they say, well, they show it on Saturday night, no one's watching, but you know what? When no one's watching C-SPAN, there's still a lot of people watching. I sound like Yogi Berra here, you know, but a lot of people watch at that hour because it's all over the country.
That's right. You know, I wouldn't trade it for nothing. What I do in life is my purpose in life. When I gave up my anger, God allowed me to discover my purpose in life. And what I do in life is what I was created to do. And if people were to give up their anger, they would be able to see clearly. The only reason that most people are working jobs and doing things that they don't want to do is because they can't see. And the reason that they can't see is because they're angry, and anger blocks life from coming from within. And you have to live from without when you think, when you're angry like that.
I'll tell you something else. It's not so much even the job. I was used to work in the post office, and I hated every minute of it. However, once my anger was released, you know, as I started to realize who this Jesus fellow really was all about, all of a sudden, the place became, you know, it wasn't so bad after all.
That's true.
And, you know, a lot of people who work 9-to-5 type jobs, they think they're insignificant. That's what the resentment is.
Yeah.
You know, from the Old Testament, from the sweat of thy brow you shall eat bread. Anything you do that's, that labor is dignity.
There's
no shame in doing that, whether you're working in a McDonald's or you're a CEO of a large corporation.
As long as
it's honest work, you have pumping gas. It's nothing to be ashamed. And so many people are ashamed of themselves.
A real quick example, a quick one, because of time. I used to be in computers, and I wanted to have my own business, so I started a janitorial service. I didn't have a lot of money to start a computer service, so I started a janitorial service. And because I was grateful, I didn't have anger in within me anymore, cleaning toilet was a blessing to me.
It was a blessing. Huh?
I had the same attitude I would have had had I been the president of the United States.
Isn't that so? And I wish the president and president now would be cleaning a few more toilets. And
instead of
dirtying up the world, he just clean up toilets.
That's for sure. I also want to encourage white Americans to speak up and tell the truth. A lot of white Americans have been intimidated by the left, you know, by people who are on the side of evil. They've been told that they are racist if they tell black people the truth, if they disagree with them. Well, God said to love your enemy as yourself, love your neighbor as yourself. And love means telling the truth without judgment. And when you tell a person the truth, it's up to them to receive it. If they hate you for it, fine. And if they accept it, that's even better. But white Americans must tell the truth, because evil is going to affect all of us in this country, and not just one segment of the country.
Well, you know, I used to have, we discussed this, I used to have racist views.
Yeah.
And thank to God I don't have those anymore. In
That's
fact,
right.
I look at it as if we're all created in God's image, which I believe, then it's quite, being racist is really very anti-God and very godless. But when I used to work with a lot of black folks in the post office, and I would say things that you're saying, and tell you what, when I hit, they liked me better when I was a racist than being who it was. But telling them the truth, they liked it even less.
So. That's right, because the truth hurts the ego, it hurts man's pride, men and women.
Although, you know, I had more fun working with white liberals who thought they were the great friends of the blacks.
Uh-huh.
One white liberal in particular who. We had a nice, and all the black coworkers who liked me, and I, boy, after this 5 or 10 minute dialogue, I had nothing but high fives from these guys, and I ended by saying, hey, why do you white liberals give the blacks the shortest month of the year for their Black History Month? And boy, that really got them howling.
Yeah.
Well, that music means we're coming to an end for this segment. I want to thank you, Reverend Peterson, and God bless you, and
you
I'm sure we'll be in touch.
I'm glad that I know you. I consider you friend, and I wish you well.
Well, the same here.
And we'll talk some more.
Very good.